So the book of James is where we're at, and we want to... This is kind of where we're going with this, and we're going to have some lessons on James. I have no idea how many, but we're starting out. And this is kind of the way it is. Now, I've come up with this kind of a title for the series for a reason. You'll probably find out just a little bit. I think we all know that James is a great book about faith. And practical faith, if you will. And James is also a book that's got a lot of wisdom that's revealed in it and other things and so on. It's a very practical book. But I remember when we had our gospel meeting, this one with Heath Rogers, he said that for those who had just obeyed the gospel, new Christians, he always recommends that they read the book of James because, number one, it's a short book. Doesn't take very long to read it, and he's right. Number two, it's a book that is easy to understand. There's not anything with great theological depth in it, you know, that it's going to take something along that line. And number three, it's very practical. It's something that can be used. And I thought, well, that just sounds pretty good. And I thought, well, I think I'll just one day sit down and read the book of James. And so I did. And then there were a couple of articles that appeared that were from a preacher's blog on the internet. And they were on the book of James, and I thought, wow, they were really good. It was on James chapter 2. And then at the same time in this time period, I had a new commentary on the book of James. It's written by Daniel H. King, Sr. I've read after Brother King for years. Brother King's one of the smartest people I know. He's got the credentials. You know, but he's just, I think he's got a PhD in ancient languages, you know. Anyway, I think that would be something that would be difficult, but nevertheless, and I've read after him for years, corresponded with him, and other things. I think he's very qualified for writing this comment. He's written other commentaries. And I recommend the one on James. It's really good. So I began reading James a second time, and I was trying to read it with fresh eyes, you know. I'm seeing this all new, and I'm seeing it in reading it in conjunction with the commentary. I would look things up as I read along in it. And now to me, I began to notice something that was new, and I thought this is like a theme that goes through this, maybe beyond the idea of it just being a practical book about faith. And the passage, I think, that best sums this up is the one right there, James chapter 1 and verse 22. Now, the New American Standard has it this way, "But prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers, who delude themselves." We're supposed to take the Word of God and we're supposed to put it into practice. We're supposed to be doers of the Word. It's not just that we read it and we look at it and it's all some academic exercise where we perhaps memorize certain things or categorize it and so on. Well, we're supposed to put this into practice. And I noticed that throughout the book of James, this is the underlying element. Every place you look, throughout the entire book. And I think that that's the theme of this. And it's almost as if every time there's an issue that comes up or something shifts a little bit in the book of James, that the underlying question is, how's your faith? How is it? In regard to what I'm bringing up in this letter that he's writing here. And I don't think that's the only theme. Don't get me wrong. I think there are a number of things that you can see in here and a lot of good things that are taught in the book of James. But I think now that this was something that was kind of obvious, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to see it as well and can consider this in our understanding of the book of James. Now, the first thing I'd like for us to do, and I'm not going to get into a lot of detail on this, but some preliminary remarks on James. The author here is James, the brother of the Lord. That's what a lot of individuals say. There's about seven different individuals in the New Testament with the name James. And some of them are well known, some of them there's little said about them, and so on. Probably one that we think of, perhaps before all others, is the James that was the brother of John, both of them being the sons of Zebedee. That James was killed very early on by Herod. He was put to death, seeing that that kind of thing pleased the Jews to put him to death. But Jesus had brothers, half-brothers, of course. That's what they would be. If you go to Matthew chapter 13, that's our first passage up there. And in verse 55, we're introduced to these brothers, where it says, "Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas?" Well, of course, there are, as I said, a number of James. There's a number of Josephs. There's also several Simons and Judas as well. There's more than one of those. And also in verse 56, he had some sisters. But he had a brother named James. And this is the one who's also believed to have been one of the leaders in the church in Jerusalem. Acts chapter 15, when they had the quote-unquote conference there, there was a man here that began to speak up by the name of James in Acts chapter 15 and verse 13. That's believed to be the same James. Now, a lot of that comes from some clues and writings outside of the Bible and records outside of the Bible and so on. Then there's another mention in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 7 about the appearances of Jesus. And now it already had said he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12. And then he appeared to James and to all the apostles. And so you find him mentioned there, kind of separate from the others. But then we get over to the book of Galatians. And he's mentioned in Galatians a couple of times. Galatians chapter 1, verse 19. When Paul's talking about going up to Jerusalem. Now remember, there's that James in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 15. But he goes up to Jerusalem, and I did not see any of the other, of the apostles except James, the Lord's brother. So, James, the Lord's brother. Now, that's pretty clear that Jesus had a brother and that he was, in the church. He was a very influential member of the church. He was in the church at a time when persecution had come. A lot of people were scattered away from the church in the persecution of Saul. But James apparently was one of the few, along with the apostles, that hung out through that persecution. Now, chapter 2 of Galatians and verse 9, "Recognizing the grace that had been given to me, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship so that we might go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised." So once again, that's the James and, continued thought from back in Galatians chapter 1, verse 19. Now, so many believe that this is the one who's the author of this. They don't think that it was James, the brother of John, because he died too early and this would have been written somewhat later. Now, one thing that I always have found that was fascinating, and again, this is based on a whole lot of evidence. None of the letters have a date on them. A lot of times on our letters, we put dates. at the top of the letter. It's one of the first things that we will put up there, you know, is the date, the month, the day, the year, something along that line. But that's not what was done in New Testament times. So you have to look elsewhere for clues to indicate, you know, when this might have been written. And most believe that this particular letter here, this epistle, was one of the first written. And I think on the basis of a number of things that's likely the case. It would be, the wrong idea if we think that, well, Matthew was written first and then Mark and on down through there, you know, that they were written in the order that we have them in the New Testament. Now, they're not. Now, I will understand and admit that Revelation is the last one, sure. And probably the three letters to John were written about the same time. Hard to say which there would be. But you have them towards the end, and, you know, that's fine. And the grouping of New Testament books are not based on chronological record. That's not it. As a matter of fact, James is probably the first book written, and it's very likely that the next one that was written was Galatians. The chances are that the gospel accounts were written quite some time after the start of the church and after the expansion of Christianity. As a matter of fact, the gospel accounts of Matthew, Mark, and Luke were probably written somewhat towards the end of some of Paul's writings and all the writing that he did. John would be written even later than that. But one of the things that we would know for sure is that this book was written before 70 AD. No mention of the destruction of Jerusalem or anything along that line. No hint of it anywhere at all. Not even anything said about it in anticipation. So it was probably before this. And then the traditional date of James' martyrdom is 62 A.D. It was believed that he was beaten to death with clubs by the Jews. So, you know, if that's the right date, certainly you'd have to write a letter before you died, wouldn't you? So it would come before that date. But then most of the commentators, when they're writing an introduction, putting one together, and so on, they don't like to be, you know, pinned down to like 1 year. They like kind of a broad window that you could put this in. And I remember for a number of years there was reading a list of these, and one man actually had put a single year date on James, and he said 46 A.D. Well, okay. But most will give you a time period of somewhere between 42 and 50. 46 would be right smack in the middle of that, wouldn't it? Yeah. And so that would work. But now, you know, all this indicates the time of this. Now, there's some that come along and say, oh, this was written in the second century, about 125 A.D. If that's the case, this was written long after the death of all of the people who would ever have been associated with Jesus. And I think that's too late for that to have taken place. But anyway, there's that. Now, one of the things, though, in the letter that's fact, some, you know, is that the epistle reveals a lot of issues that were present then. And when you look at them, and I was starting to divide this up, you know, taking an issue. Here's an issue. How's your faith with this issue? How's your faith when it comes to this? How's your faith? I could see that being in James' mind as he would write this letter. And so he was covering issues that the brethren would be going through. And I just think it's remarkable that the issues that they were facing then are issues that still exist today, and that we have to come to grips with as well. But then in addressing these issues and, you know, how's your faith when it comes to these issues, of course, all these issues are related to, number one, faith. It's just part of it. But it's not just faith. It's faith that has as a basis spiritual maturity. Now, if you think about maturity, any kind of maturity, it doesn't matter what the subject is. It doesn't matter if it's something in life like cooking, or if it's working on a lawnmower, or if it's playing a game, a sport, or something along that line. All of these things that we do, we have a tendency to mature as we're involved in them. You learn things and you become more adept at being a cook, or at repairing a lawnmower, or watching a baseball game this afternoon. I'm happy to report the Tigers won, but anyway, I was watching this and I'm thinking to myself, and there's one man and they were talking about him, and the one the color commentator said, it's amazing how much he's improved in the field and at bat. And I thought to myself, that's what you're supposed to do. But what would you say? Well, he's maturing, you see. He's getting better. And so there's faith, and then there's this maturity. But we're talking about spiritual maturity, aren't we? And spiritual maturity indicates that you're able to do more things with that faith that you have. So the faith grows stronger. Ideally, that's what happens. Of course it does. But then now here's the thing. We go back to what I'm saying is the important passage to remember, and that's right here. So as the faith grows stronger, and as the spiritual maturity develops, you prove yourselves doers of the word. There might be a time when you see something and you've got a rudimentary grasp of what this says and what it means. Okay? But you don't know what to do with it. Never happened? Or are we all going to raise our hand and say, oh no, I knew everything perfectly and I was able to, you know, apply it perfectly from day one? No, we're not going to be that foolish and say that kind of thing. But we understand that. And so there's a development here. And so along with hearing and listening and understanding these things, we become doers. So there's that faith, there's that spiritual maturity, and this is how it's supposed to be. Now, if we're not doers, as opposed to being hearers only, there are those that are just here only. There's some that are here only because, well, they intend to. And boy, they've got a good grasp of it. I mean to tell you, they could rattle off things out of the Bible like you just would not believe. It would just be astounding to hear them do this. But then they're nowhere near being what anyone would call a doer of the word. I'm sure that we can understand that. And those are the individuals that end up what? Deluding themselves. Because they think just being a hearer, just listening, is good enough. No. You've got to be a hearer. Of course you do. Because faith comes faith. Now it comes by hearing, doesn't it? And hearing by the word of God. That, yeah. But then there's the spiritual maturity in that growing when you become doers of the word. When you prove yourself. Right. That's exactly right. And so this is kind of how this all, you know, this all came about. Now, I got something else here I'd like for us to consider. And I call this setting the foundation. There's a foundation in here, and it's found early on in James chapter 1. And particularly, it's in verse 3. Look at this. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. What would that testing of your faith be? Now, it's real easy to drop down there and just jump right onto temptations and other things. Well, yeah, that'd be an easy way of doing it. But maybe we ought to skip over that and think, well, now this testing of your faith, is that is that when something comes along, anything comes along, now not just temptation, anything comes along, am I a doer of the word? I think that's where the test of faith is at. Being a doer of the word. Not just a hearer, but a doer of the word. The King James Version, that's the New American Standard up there. The King James Version, the New King James Version, the American Standard Version all has patience there instead of endurance. The English Standard Version has, and this may be the best, has steadfastness. Well, that may be better of all. And what this word means, I looked it up. I looked up to see what does the original word mean. I look at all these English words. But now, the original word means something along this line, and I've got it paraphrased here, what all of them together said. It means not passively enduring. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that something's come along and it's a test of my faith and okay, I'm just going to hunker down and just take it until it's over. That might be endurance and patience of a sort. But that's not what this means here. Now, I think sometimes that's what people think that it means. But no, that's not the idea. It's really talking about a quality that's developed. And it allows one to stand and be victorious. You find out that, well, the testing of your faith, it produces endurance. And you find out, you know what? You're a doer of the word. That's not bragging. That's not arrogance. That's nothing along that line. That's what it's supposed to be. And when a person realizes that they can handle this and that they can be successful and victorious, what do you think is going to happen the next time? What happens like that? You know, my grandson, Corrigan's son, 10 years old. This is his first year to really play serious organized baseball. And he's not done it before, and he looks good swinging the bat. You know, he looks good at that. And he's not too afraid of the ball. He stands a little bit away from the plate, but you know, we've been working on getting to move up there a little bit. But every time he came up, it was a walk or a strikeout, or he got hit by a pitch. That didn't bother him, get hit by a pitch. It didn't hurt. And you just wonder, are we going to see anything? I just hated to think, you know. I mean, and the other night, he took a swing, and I mean just whistled one out to the outfield for a double. Now, it's positive feedback for a little guy like that. And the next time he came up, he looked like Ty Cobb up there at the bat, you know. Just throw that thing down here. I'll take care of it, you know. Now, that's how it works with kids, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, that's how it works with adults. We find out that we can do something, we can be successful, we can be victorious. When some issue comes our way, if temptation comes our way, what's it like the next time? Well, we're ready for it. We can draw on the experience, and there's just a real good chance that we'll be successful again. I'm sure that we can understand that kind of a thing. The goal is actually in James chapter 4. Now look at James chapter 4. After this in verse 3, look at verse 4. That your endurance will have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete and lacking in nothing. The word perfect there, it doesn't mean sinless. It's that word that means mature. That's what's used here. But that's the goal. That you'd be mature, that you'd be complete, that you'd be lacking nothing. That's what this is all about. And so the tests that come your way are to prove what you're made out of and see if you're a doer and not just a hearer only. How's it working? How is your faith when these things come along? And it's sad whenever something comes along in someone's life and you talk to them. And I've talked to lots of folks like that. I'm sure you've talked to people as well. That when some issue comes along in their life, the last thing that they think about with this issue is anything that's a matter of faith. They don't think about that. They don't think about the Word. They don't think about God, prayer, and other things. You know, it's just that's not in the picture. But it should be, because there are many things that are going to test our faith. You can count on it. And James knew that. And he wrote this letter understanding that there were those that were already undergoing these kinds of things, or they're going to undergo these. And so will we. Some of the very... We're not going to endure... Or encounter everything, every issue in the book of James. Well, there'll be some of them, won't there? Yeah. How about this? In James chapter 1, verses 13 through 16. Well, that's about temptation. Temptation leads to sin. How's your faith when you're tempted? How's it working when it comes to temptation? You see what he's saying there? Are you a doer? Oh, you've heard it? Are you a doer? And then, how about, let's go over here to chapter 2. Verses 1 through 13. That's one of the kind of the more lengthy occasions here. But I think it's really all summed up in verse 1. Do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism or respect of persons. Now, I know it's about rich and poor and other... But how's your faith when it comes to respect to persons? In any way, shape, or form, how is it? How is your faith? How is your faith whenever it comes to people who are different ethnic origins or different skin color or different social level? How's your faith when it comes to respect to persons? It is so easy. The easiest thing in the world is to have respect to persons. If anybody thinks that that's not the case, I just wonder, where have you been? Oh, it's easy. And too many times we deceive ourselves into saying or thinking, oh, I don't have that. Really? Really? Is that right? Do you know where the number one place is where people will have respect of persons and have it without thinking? You know where it's at? Family members. That's right. A family member that's maybe a member of the church goes haywire. And people are trying to talk to that person to try and get them back on the straight and narrow. And the other family members get upset and mad because you're talking to them about their soul and you need to get back on track. And then they won't do it. They've stepped out of line, they're out of duty, they're going to stay there, it becomes clear. I've even had some folks tell me, I'm not coming back, period. And the church withdrew from that person. And there were family members in the church that were just furious. Well, you've withdrawn from them. Is that respect to persons? When you think somehow or another, a family member, and I understand that you love them, you're blood relatives with them, they'll get a pass because, well, that's my family. Do we think about that? How is your faith when it comes to respect to persons? That's a big one. But then it goes on with a number of other things. And James chapter 4, verses 1 through 6, actually the first part of verse 6. How's your faith whenever it comes to worldly desires? Well, that's what he's talking about in there. Those things can creep up on us. You know, it's like... like some kind of an animal or a reptile. Not a reptile. I don't even like to think about that. But, you know, they'll kind of sneak up on you and latch onto you, an ankle or something like that. and won't hardly let go. And it just happens and we didn't realize it, didn't see it coming. All of a sudden, bang, it's got us. Worldly desires. That's what, it can happen like that. And how's your faith, though? Whenever that does happen and you realize what's going on, how's your faith? Now, these are just a few things that James discusses. And I hope there are enough things here that it kind of whets our appetite to learn more, because by learning more and realizing he was encouraging them to be doers of the word, not hearers only, well, the same thing applies to us. Because now, don't we face temptation? Don't we face respect of persons? Don't we face worldly desires today? Of course we do. Now, maybe each and every one of us don't face all those things. We're going to face some of them. And when we do, how's your faith? How is it? So that's kind of what James is all about. He's writing to the fledgling church. He's offering some thought-provoking and practical analysis in addition to solutions, real solutions. And throughout the epistle, there's challenge after challenge that's addressed in all these issues. They're going to face them, and we can look back at this and say, wow, you know what? We've got to realize that this can happen to us as well. And whatever answer or solution there is, it has to be faith-based. How is your faith when these things come along? I think that's something that we just absolutely have to consider, and why James is so valuable. Now, the success, we find mention of success and blessing back in James chapter 1, and wait a minute now, let me get up here. It's necessary to have unshakable faith in order to be successful. And then you see that there's success and blessing here in James chapter 1, verse 12. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trials. For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. All right, so there can be success here. And it sees, here's the man who's had these trials come along, the testing, been successful, and it's going to be better for it. And then in verses 16 through 18, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, so that we would be a kind of first fruits among his brethren. This is telling us that this is the blessing that we have, where we won't be deceived. The good things that come from God, the blessings that come from God, and the exercise of his will in our following that will and in our being doers of the word, we will truly be blessed, successful, and all these things. Now take your songbooks, turn to the songs that have been selected. It's admitted that many are persuaded that they do indeed have faith. And that would be a good thing. Some are even so bold as to say that they believe what is written. Do you? Good. That's really good to hear. And James challenges that. And he challenges us when we say that. How is your faith? How is your faith when it comes to something like James chapter 1, verse 21, about receiving the word implanted, which is able to save your souls? How's your faith about that? In the initial response to the gospel invitation, in believing in Jesus Christ and repenting of your sins and being baptized. Oh, I know that's what the Bible says. How's your faith when it comes to that? Do you do it? I've had people tell me this. Oh, I agree with you 100% on everything you're saying. And then to see them never put it into act, never become a doer, you say. And then there are, and then here's another one, not down, just down a little bit, in verse 25 there in chapter 1, about anyone who looks at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it or continues in it, the King James Version has, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. Are we abiding or continuing in that word? How's our faith? Are we continuing in it? I hope it's not something that, well, you know, we practice it when we come together the few times, you know, during the week, and the rest of the time, well, you know, never crosses my mind. Well, we come up pretty well short on that. But we need to be obedient to the gospel. We need to be obedient to the gospel all the time. And how's our faith when it comes actually to doing that? Consider these things as we offer the invitation at this time. If you're subject, why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.